Welcome to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Steve Cleary. While mountain biking has been around since the 1980s, its popularity in Alaska has taken off in recent years as more riders join the sport and more trails are added to the growing list of single track trails in Alaska. Today, I am speaking with two different representatives of the Single Track Advocates, an Anchorage-based nonprofit that's been around since 2004. Their group is dedicated to working with the community to preserve, maintain, and create single track trails in Anchorage. They have built over 35 miles of trails since their founding, and they recently hired their first executive director. I'll speak with him and one of their founders. That's ahead on Outdoor Explorer. This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Steve Cleary. My guests today are Janice Tower and George Pollock. Janice is one of the founders of STA, and George recently joined as their first executive director. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being on Outdoor Explorer.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you. Excited to talk about mountain biking in the summer and whatever type of biking you want to talk about in addition to things that the Single Track Advocates do. But maybe let's start with you, Janice. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into mountain biking?
Sure. Well, I was born and raised on the Anchorage hillside. My parents came to Alaska in 1953. So, I'm intimately aware of our city and the parks that we have around town. I grew up actually downhill ski racing at Alyeska and grew up in the Anchorage school system, went outside for college for 4 years on the East Coast, and then was definitely pulled back to Alaska where my roots are. I started mountain biking in 1992. I'm kind of dating myself there. And when we got back to Alaska, I was mostly mountain biking on game trails and social trails around what's now Far North Bicentennial Park. And I mean, that was super fun. Mountain biking was kind of just getting going as a sport. So at that time, we really didn't have full suspension and jump lines and things like that. So it's been pretty cool to be a part of the growing sport from the ground up, literally.
Right. And then STA, the Single Track Advocates, came along in 2004. And how did that, how did the initial push to build some trails and kind of get together as a group come about?
Well, mountain biking was becoming more and more popular. People were enjoying riding through the woods, again, on socials trails and ski trails. And there were more and more people just out enjoying nature on two wheels. But back then, the early 2000s, because there were so many more people getting involved in the sport, there was more pressure that was put on the trails that we have or had at that time, which were ski trails and social trails. And so it got rather contentious among the user groups in limited parkland for the numbers of people that were out there new to the sport, this new sport. So there were some user conflicts, and we assembled a core group of people representing all of those user groups to talk about the park and what it is that we enjoy about the park from our various perspectives, and just came to just talk to one another and gain some understanding about what it is we value about their sport and what it is we value about this natural environment. So we cobbled together some cooperation to build our first trail, which is Brown Bear. We were really fortunate to have the National Park Service RTCA program give us some technical support, and also the support and collaboration of Alaska Trails. So we built Brown Bear all by hand over one summer. Just volunteers went out there and learned from the International Mountain Biking Association. They sent up a crew to teach us how to do this method of trail building. And so the product is Brown Bear, which a lot of people still enjoy today. And since then, never in my wildest dreams could I ever anticipate that we would actually get permission to build purpose-built mountain biking trails by hand and machine. So that was our infancy. And in 2008, we built out phase one of the Hillside STA trails, that what we now called Old School. So as you know, things kind of balloon from that point, and we have 35 to 40 miles of trails in Anchorage.
Well, that's a great history of it, and it's been an impressive amount of volunteer work over the many years. But George, you were recently hired as the first executive director. There's been some part-time employees prior to you, but can you give us a little bit of your history and then what your role as the new ED is going to be for STA?
Yeah, Steve, I came to Alaska in 93. Came up for a couple weeks, wanted to see what Alaska would be like, and here I am today. And I'd started mountain biking in the mid-80s when I went to college in Ohio, and got into racing all over Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Michigan. Started working in bike shops to support that racing habit. And when I came to Alaska, my second day in town, I found myself at the motorcycle shop, bicycle department, and was wrenching on bikes in Alaska. And that got me here for my first winter. I started rock climbing, ice climbing, peak bagging, riding mountain bikes, skiing, all the things one does. And it's just been a central part of who I am and why I've stayed in Alaska. I've applied my engineering degree and worked in Alaska extensively all over the lower 48, and some international work, and mountain biking has been central to that. As most of us do, we travel with our bikes all over, and I'm really happy to represent Single Track Advocates, that we have our trails in our backyard, and it's a destination for people from the outside as well as for us that live here, so we can enjoy what we have on purpose-built trails.
That's great. And your role as executive director, you've just been there a couple months, I believe. Mm-hmm. How do you see things coming? What is going to be your main duty or duties as you progress?
Yeah, we've been working this summer on increasing our volunteer capabilities, addressing the existing trails that we have. We're doing a lot of outreach with both the shops. We're going to have some community outreach get-togethers. We have our first one coming up just in a matter of days. When this airs, we'll have new ones that are posted. We'll update those to the show notes. We want to increase the outreach throughout the year. As Janice said, a lot of these are the summer dirt trails. We also groom them in the winter, so you can ride your fat bike, and there's an extensive network of social trails in the winter as well. So we want to look and coordinate those activities so people know where things are for all seasons. We also are looking at a major initiative next year to have an in-house pro trail crew. STA's done an amazing job of building new trails. We have been maintaining them mainly through the efforts of volunteers, and they need more work. So we're going to look at getting a mechanized trail crew out, reworking, for instance, Jeff's Whoop Whoop, A-Line, Gower Power on the Hillside, the Upper Hemlock Burn Trail in Chugach State Park, as well as Lee's Train, Northwest Passage. We have a long list of trails that need mechanized work. That's going to be a big part of our effort. We'll be looking to get some grants backing that, as well as fundraising natively, which is how all these trails have been built.
That's great. And I think some of us, I think of my first arrival in Anchorage in the late 90s. I think things like the Coastal Trail or the Chester Creek Trail were just a given. They've been there forever. And then talking to trail pioneers like Laney Fleischer and figuring out, like, hey, this wasn't a no-brainer. There were people doing that. And Janice, you mentioned earlier, in the early parts of STA, there was contention. I'm sure there were a lot of people who weren't psyched to have bikers on their trails. And so can you speak a little bit more about kind of the partnerships that you've had with maybe groups like the Nordic Skiing Association of Anchorage or the state parks, like how that's sort of been part of your plan or just the way that STA has done business over the years?
Yeah, the whole process was really interesting, just through that process of dialogue that I mentioned, of all the user groups getting together. The bikers were primarily on the ski trails, which was causing some erosion and traffic issues. And in the wintertime, the fat bikers were wandering out onto the ski trails. Our partnership with the Skiing Association has been really wonderful. I trace it back to a conversation that Lee Bowling and I had with Jim Burkholder he came to us and said, you know, what do you think about nesting some mountain bike trails among our ski trails at Kincaid? And we were shocked. I mean, what a novel concept to be actually invited in to explore the potential. And it solved several problems, one of which was to get the bikers off the ski trails in summer and winter, which helped with maintenance for them, and also to just increase usership in Kincaid Park, particularly at the Jodhpur Trailhead, where there was sometimes some nefarious things going on there. So we just, through that one conversation that we had with Jim, we started this wonderful working relationship with the skiing association. So the result of that was Kincaid Phase 1, which is about 9 miles of trail to the south of the Raspberry Park Road. And then that was so successful that a couple years later, we expanded over to the north side, which we know as Kincaid Phase 2. So it seemed to work well for all parties involved. And, you know, we could look at other areas like up around the Spencer Loop when we built out Phase 2 of the Hillside STA trails. Another really great partnership we had through the ski club was with Jeff Scott, who he worked with NC Machinery at the time. And they were really helpful in terms of in-kind services, loaning us equipment to build out the hillside trails. And that's why we named Jeff's Whoop Whoop after Jeff Scott, just because he really helped advance our trail building efforts through our collaboration.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and it just seems like, you know, as somebody who likes to both bike and ski, it's nice when there is that sort of cooperation. And I often find in years where there's low snow, people get a little antsy. But then once the snow comes in and the grooming, like George was talking about, happens, then everybody's happy. Everybody's got the trails that they want to use on. And I think really what, and I forget who first said it, but, you know, in the skiing community, you know, there's rock skis that you use at the beginning of the year because you don't want to damage your good skis when there's low snow. But the saying that's come about is fat bikes are the new rock skis. And so to maintain your shape and fitness when you're, you know, waiting for that snow to come, a lot of people have turned to fat bikes when really they would prefer to ski. But, you know, it's all fun and it's great that there are this number of trails out there. It's really neat to hear. I didn't realize that part about Jim Burkholder, locally famous ski personality, goes by Berkey a lot. And you can see, I feel like it's Berkey's Bend up coming up over near the Jodhpur Trails. But to have somebody, you know, approach you and with that vision is really an interesting and fascinating part. But you've both mentioned a lot about the machinery and kind of what it takes to build trails, unless a hardcore group of volunteers gets out there to build one like Brown Bear. George, can you talk a little bit about the costs, the maintenance, the machinery that goes into putting these trails together and then also maintaining them?
Yeah, and in terms of construction, you're typically on the mechanical side, you're talking a mini excavator. And there are different sizes that you can use depending on the ultimate width you want to build the final trail to. There's the latest service single track was done with a small that you can set the tracks in closer. It's a much more intimate trail that was built. They folded the moss layer back, constructed, then folded it back over. And it also helps in long-term maintenance. You don't have the grasses and alders, Devil's Club growing in when you do that. So they've been in for a couple of years and they've held up really well. And then we have aside, if you are in a really, really rough environment, you could also have small bulldozers you could use, removing tree stumps if you're going through a heavily forested area. We try to minimize the removal of trees to the extent possible, but there's a certain amount that you do have to put those in. And then you have plate compactors and the finishing equipment that would get the material in place. All the trails that we've built have utilized the material on site, and that does create a long-term maintenance issue, because you don't necessarily have the best material you would want to have. And we do the best that we can. That's a lot of the volunteer efforts have been done to like keep that material in place and have a good tread so that you have a riding surface to go on. With a lot of drains, you do a lot of like grade changes so you can divert water off the trail to maintain a sustainable trail. And I should say, all the trails are built in full sustainable trail development methodologies. You don't want to have trails that are too steep. You want to put them in areas where they're going to drain. There's a lot that goes in before you get to constructing in the layout of where they're going to be, planning, where you, and the integration with NSAA at Kincaid and Hillside. All of the trails, when the mountain bike trails cross the ski trails, that's all planned out so you have good sight lines, both for the skiers in the wintertime, for the riders in the summer, people crossing. So there's a lot that goes in that I don't know if a lot of people are aware that's in place with it. As the trails have aged, one of our maintenance activities has also been we've gone in-house to take care of the brush cutting, weed whacking, removal of alders. We have a contractor that does that for us. We've just completed that effort at all the trails. And that's a huge safety margin of factor that gives us. It improves our sight lines, allows people to see people coming the other way. Not all of our trails are one way. And also for other trail users, all the trails that STA has built have been open up to all trail users that are been approved as users of that trail. So we don't turn away anyone. We work with everyone, and we want to make sure we have everyone have access safely to utilize those trails.
Well, thanks, George. Yeah, Janice, you must have seen a lot of evolution over trail building since 2004. But I know you and STA have had great success with fundraising. Can you talk about how grants and other donations have really fueled the organization, and where do you see that going in the future? Do you still plan to apply for and seek out either government or private grants, or is it mostly donations that the club is relying on these days?
Yeah, we fund a lot of our projects through grants and individual donations, which is just truly remarkable how supportive the community has been in terms of, you know, just opening up their checkbooks and giving us money when we have a trail project coming up. So we've been super grateful to those people who have supported us and to corporations who have supported us over the years. So we'll continue seeking out those funding sources. One thing that is new to us this year that we developed is a sustainability fund. And that's kind of my pet project these days. We're really good at raising money for a project. Everybody wants a new trail, and it's super exciting, and you know, we gather a lot of energy and enthusiasm for that. But the topic of maintenance is a little less sexy. So that's my main push this year, is to develop the sustainability fund to the point where the earnings of that fund can go into a sustainable source of income for us to pay for things like weed whacking and tread repair and some reroutes if possible. So we're really pushing for that this year, and we'll be marketing that to the public. It's a great way for senior athletes, senior riders, to look toward funding their legacy in the community. If they love mountain biking, you know, how do they want to be remembered? How do they want to feel good about the role that they're playing in the community to, you know, continue and further the sport? So, you know, things like IRA distributions and other mechanisms like that are very tax advantaged and create a real win-win-win situation. So my big audacious goal, I'm really into that these days, is, you know, shoot for the moon type goal is, you know, I'd like to see $1 million in that fund to invest, keep the principal intact, and use those earnings to pay for maintenance. We're really good at building trails. Now I want to be excellent at maintaining them.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. And we'll certainly have a link to the STA website in our show notes. If you're just joining us, this is Outdoor Explorer from Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Steve Cleary. And today I'm talking mountain biking with Janice Tower and George Pollock of the Single Track Advocates. I know that I've seen you out, Janice, and other volunteers brushing some of those 35 miles of trails before, but that's just a really big undertaking to try to get all that done, because you mentioned weed whacking, but it's a lot more intensive than that, and just a hard, hot job. George, as it goes forward, you're talking about a crew that STA would like to hire next summer. Do you see being able to keep up with that maintenance and also think about new trail projects, or is it kind of let's maintain what we have?
I think we're going to definitely look at new opportunities for trails as they present, but the effort is going to be on the in-house crew to maintain the trails we have, and that'll be working extensively with our partners at Chugach State Park, with the municipality, with the BLM land managers, as we go forward and establish the maintenance on those trails and look to increase other trail opportunities.
Well, that's great. And I know that at the beginning of the year, everybody's kind of chomping at the bit, or I should say the beginning of the season, maybe May, depending on the snow and a cold spring like we had last time. Janice, can you tell us a little bit about what STA does to try to make sure that people aren't damaging trails before they're ready in the start of summer, and then kind of how you wrap things up when things wind down in the fall?
Well, early in the season, people are really anxious to get out there, usually prematurely. And we really try to encourage people to stay off the trails, let them dry out, because the ruts that people make stay with us all summer. And we try our best through just public outreach and to try to get people to kind of cool their heels a little bit before they head out there. But we're not always successful. So one of our big pushes in the early season is to get the work parties out there with hand tools and whatnot. And it really is backbreaking to try to erase some of these ruts and reestablish draining. It's just kind of a constant battle there. But we're getting better at it. The more people are aware of the impact that they're making, and they're able to tell their friends, say, hey, let's give the trails another week to dry out. Let's go ride gravel bikes or something on the road. And then in the fall, we still try to engage our volunteers, getting them out on work parties to deal with more brush that's grown up, fix more drainage issues that have occurred over the summer, and really try to make it festive and fun, and to engage our volunteers as we head into the winter.
Janice, it's probably hard for you to think about being a beginner, but if somebody were interested in starting out mountain biking here in Anchorage, what would you recommend? Where do they start? How do they approach dipping their toe into this sport?
Well, there's a number of ways to get involved. For youth, that's a one that's near and dear to my heart. They could get involved through the Mighty Bikes program, which I helped get started back in the year 2000. And the Mighty Bikes program has about 300 kids per summer, and they take them out in groups kind of similar to the Junior Nordic program. For adults, there's accessing the trails that maybe are a little bit easier, simpler to ride, just to learn some basic skills, maybe starting off with some of the multi-use trails around town, kind of dip their toe onto the dirt a little bit. Single Track Advocates has several trails out in Kincaid that are pretty beginner and intermediate friendly, and those are all color-coded on our maps. The Service Single Track is beginner and intermediate focused, and it's a really unique trail system in that you can choose your own adventure. You can roll everything out there. If you're intermediate, you can get your wheels off the ground a little bit if you like. And if you're advanced, there's some some larger features out there that they can take on. So the cool thing about the Service Single Track Network is that you can lap it, go over and over again. The climbing isn't very difficult. And so each time you go around, you can experiment a little and, you know, kind of take a little step up from there. And community-wide, of course, you know, we have Hilltop, which has just been doing an incredible job at developing slope-style, freestyle riding at that facility. And they do have certified mountain bike instructors there. So you could also look toward Hilltop Ski Area for some more formal instructors. And there are some individuals out in the community who are also certified mountain bike instructors.
Great. Thanks. Well, I'm glad you mentioned Mighty Bikes. My son participated in it years ago, and it's a wonderful program. If you've ever been at Kincaid, or at least when my son was doing it, Trailside Elementary, or when they start out, there's just this wonderful cacophony of kids enjoying trails, and all those kids are growing up to enjoy the outdoors. It's a really inspirational program. But George, I was going to have you tell us a little bit more about the color coding of the trails, and then maybe the signs that I always see about pre-ride, re-ride, free ride, and sort of safety, and maybe a little bit of etiquette for trail use as well.
Yeah, I think the you said pre-ride, re-ride, free ride. That's the mantra. Every time you go out to the trail, even if you haven't been to the trail for a couple weeks, the rains we just had, if it's been dry, the trails could dry out, and the berms, bumps could get really friable and go away. Always be cautious, no matter what the trail rating is. So mountain biking is a risky endeavor. You're in charge of your behavior, and so we always say, you know, pre-ride, re-ride, free ride. The grading system is basically a blue, green, black grading scale that we use. Very easy to understand. Blue is the easiest level of trails. Green is the easiest level of trails. Blue is intermediate, and black is advanced. There are other higher scales, double black and red, which we don't have any of those grades in our trail system. So, and what we've done is, even on the green and blue lines, as Janice alluded to, we do have alternate lines. Everything is rollable, but you can also find something off to the side, a little jump, a little technical feature. So there's a lot of options that are available, and those change over time as well. Trails have been constructed with burn-in ride features where the tread isn't finished, so there are roots that are exposed that change over time. And all the trails are doing that in any event. So yeah, it's a really wide array of difficulties that you can find, and it's out there to challenge everyone.
Wonderful. Thanks. Janice, where else besides these Anchorage trails do you like to ride? I know there's trails out in Mirror Lake, out in the valley, out at GPRA. Where do you find yourself? Or maybe down on the Kenai. When you go out of town, where do you like to ride?
Well, I really like the point-to-point single-track experience. So as soon as those trails on the Kenai start drying out, and before the dense, heavy underbrush starts growing up, you can find me down there early season, down on the Russian Lakes Trail or Johnson Pass, just north of Anchorage, out in the Matanuska Valley. They've done an excellent job of developing trails out there, also around Matanuska Lakes and GPRA, closer in at Eagle River, at Mirror Lake. Those are super fun for all ages. It's a tight little network of trails in there from beginning to, you know, big jump lines there. So we're really fortunate that we have these little mountain bike pockets in South Central region, you know, close into Anchorage. And also down on the Kenai Peninsula, it's Soldotna and Homer. Homer's really developing some trails. So really anywhere you go these days within driving distance in South Central, just load up your bike because there's always going to be some place to ride.
Yeah. George, you got anything to add to that? Where do you like to go when you venture outside of Anchorage for some mountain biking?
Oh, that's a great solid list. And there are, of course, many places outside in the lower 48 that are meccas you can go to come back and polish your skills. But I think that really summed up the list really well.
Well, that's great. Can you think of any winter activities for the club? I know you mentioned the grooming. Is that kind of the main winter activity when people switch over to fat bikes?
Yeah, grooming the trails that we have and just maintaining that access to the winter riding.
Yeah, and so I've seen, I think it was called a snow dog, and maybe you use mostly snow machines now, but can you give us a quick rundown of what that winter maintenance looks like, George?
Yeah, on the, excuse me, STA trails, we have a snow machine and we'll have a drag that they'll be pulled behind the tread, and that'll flatten and compress the snow. There's a snow dog, which is basically the track from a snow machine that you sit on and try to, it's a quite a balancing act, and it'll leave a smaller, a narrower groomed tread in the snow as well to give a riding platform. And there's also an extensive social network throughout Anchorage that people snowshoe in trails that are even smaller, typically maybe 12 inches wide.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, I appreciate all of the trails that sort of bloom in the Far North Bicentennial Park in the wintertime, and it really provides some great access. Is there anything else STA related that you two were hoping to talk about today that I didn't get to?
Well, I would just add on to what George was saying about the winter grooming. We own a couple of snow machines, but they require maintenance and fuel. And it's all done by volunteers. So we don't pay anybody to go out there. These guys hop on the machines after work. They've worked a hard day, and off they go out under cover of darkness to groom, you know, hemlock and all around Kincaid and Hillside. So I really want to give those guys a shout out for creating quality riding experiences in the wintertime, which arguably that is our longest season. And the fat biking, because of their efforts, has really been enhanced. So, you know, again, it does require money to maintain the machines and pay for fuel. So, you know, putting my fundraiser hat on, I'm always out there, you know, trying to get the funds so that we can be able to do that. And again, that's all with volunteers for now.
Yeah, and just imagining, you know, all the twists and turns and everything that we like about those, you know, windy trails makes it very difficult, I would imagine, to drive a snow machine up or down on it. And so that grooming really requires some skill for those volunteers. So it's certainly something to appreciate. Well, I just want to thank my guests for being on Outdoor Explorer today. Janice Tower, one of the founders of the Single Track Advocates, and George Pollock, the executive director. Thanks so much for being here today and telling us about your work.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Steve Cleary. For our next section of the program, we're going to be speaking to Eric Troyer, president of the Fairbanks Cycle Club. Eric, thanks for joining us on Outdoor Explorer today.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, why don't you give us a little bit of your history with Fairbanks and also with the Cycle Club. How did it get started, and how did you get started with it?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Alaska, and I moved up to Fairbanks in 1989, and then I got involved with the cycle club. I started doing the Tuesday night mountain bike rides in the 90s, and then eventually got to the point where I was one of the ride leaders when the original founder left. And then through that, I got more involved in the club, eventually running the bike swap, and then got on board with the board, became the treasurer, and now I'm the president. And I'm still I'm the main ride leader with the Tuesday night mountain bike rides. So that's in a nutshell, that's it. There are, of course, a lot more details along the way, but
sure,
that's the quick story.
Yeah, and we'll link to the Fairbanks Cycle Club in the show notes. You've got a lot of activities year round up there, but yeah, we're focusing on mountain biking today. So maybe tell us a little bit more about those Tuesday night rides. What do those entail?
Yeah, those are informally called Doug rides because they were started by Doug Burnside back in the 90s, and he was just looking for people to go riding with. So he decided to start these rides, and people started coming, and they've been going on for well over 20 years now. We bike all over the place. We usually do a ride in a different place every week. starting in mid-May and going through about mid or early to mid-September. You can, on our website, you can look at the Tuesday night mountain bike ride schedule, and we have links to ride with GPS routes on almost all the rides that we have. So we're going to different places every week. There are a lot of trails up here. One of the reasons I got involved with started going on the mountain bike rides was I wanted to try to figure out what trails there were up here to go riding on. We don't have any kind of big map. We still don't. There's more information out there now than there used to be through places like Trail Forks and All Trails. And also I keep a whole collection of trails on my trails website, a bunch of information on online trails. But that's why I got involved with the Mountain Bike Club, to find out where the trails were. And it's a great way to do that, because we're always going on new trails, and that we have a lot of trails in the Fairbanks area that don't have official signs. They don't have official trailheads. So it can be hard to learn where to go and what to do just on your own. You have to either do a lot of digging, watching Strava, following someone up here who's on Strava is a great way to do that. But otherwise, come on one of our rides and we can show you different places.
Well, that's great. I'm familiar with the Esther Dome single track. Are there any other ones that you would say are officially designated that are pretty easy for people to put their finger on or search via Google? Obviously, they'll go to your club website. But what else besides the Esther Dome single track are kind of the formal purpose-built single track up there?
Yeah, we have almost nothing for formal purpose-built single track besides the Esther Dome single track.
Okay.
We do. There are a couple of trails on base that you can get through the Birchill Recreation Area that were built way back when that are available. And there's also off the Birchill Recreation Trails, there are a couple of single track trails that are skiing single track in the classic only in the winter. And then in the summer, you can use them as mountain bike trails. But other than that, yeah, we don't have anything that's purpose built. We have we ride a lot of glorified game trails. So there's quite a few of those or informal trails that have built through. Those can vary from being really nice trails to being really rooty trails, lots of roots. And we have a lot of trails that are kind of just general purpose, single track trails. A good one is the Scarland Trail. That one's very popular. And then we have ski trails. The UAF is a ski trail. UAF trails are ski trails that we bike on. There's also the Birchill Recreation Area ski trails that we bike on as well. And the Scarland Trail is also a ski trail in the winter. So a lot of just general purpose trails we bike on. Oh, and I should not leave out all the mining roads. We do a lot of biking on mining roads that have been here for many years. So, and a few trapping trails, I guess, as well. So we have a lot of trails, but all told, purpose-built mountain bike trails, about 12 miles of those.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a good Alaska mix of mining, trapping, game trails, all of the above. So yeah, if one of our listeners was thinking like, oh, I got to go up to Fairbanks for a week for work, it seems like the answer is, or if the question were, should they bring their mountain bike? The answer is yes. And then would you have them start out with kind of one of those ones that you just mentioned? Or what are the sort of beginner, easy to find loops to start out with up in Fairbanks?
Oh, yeah. The Esther Dome single track is the first place I would point to. People really like that. It's got a trailhead with parking, and there's a lot of information out on the web on that. So that's definitely a place to go. And then another place would be the Skyline Ridge Park is a borough park, and that's got some really nice trails. They can be kind of rooty, but if you like that, they can be a blast. We love riding those trails. Then there's, of course, I just mentioned the UAF and Birchill ski trails that are bikeable in the summer. And then certainly close to Fairbanks that I don't want to leave out is the Chena River State Recreation Area, which has a mix of motorized and non-motorized multi-purpose trails. Most of them are motorized, but there's some awesome trails up there to ride as well. You could spend a lot of time mountain biking up here and not do the same trail twice.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned Chena. That wasn't on my radar at all. I will remind our listeners that you're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Steve Cleary, and I'm speaking with Eric Troyer, the president of the Fairbanks Cycle Club, telling us all about the fun trails and activities up in Fairbanks. How does it work with fat biking up there, Eric? Is there official grooming? Is it mostly human grooming via either snowshoes or just people pedaling over the trails? How does that work in the wintertime?
Yeah, we've got, in the past couple of years, Goldstream Sports has been really big with grooming the Esterdome single track trails. And people have been really positive about that. They're loving that. So those trails get groomed in the winter for fat biking. Other than that, we it's mainly groomed by snow machine and dog mushing. And then just use. We've got a lot of snow machine trails up here and dog mushing trails up here that go on for hundreds of miles. So we are in the wintertime, a lot more trails open up to us that are too wet in the summertime. So we are always finding new places to ride. It's pretty awesome in the wintertime. The only challenge with the wintertime is it can get too cold. So we have an official cutoff of 20 below. But locals in town go a lot colder than that. When we get really frigid temperatures, you will see guys out there trying to find the coldest point, often searching for 50 below. They'll be on Strava riding around trying to find that really cold point. So people go out a lot colder than we do officially, because we close it off at 20 below. We just decided with group rides, we don't know exactly who's coming. We don't want to risk someone getting hurt.
Sure. I wonder if that's a category now on Strava, like the fastest known time or something, the coldest spot. That's a very Fairbanks and thing to keep track of and search out. Yeah.
That would be a good one. So, yeah. And the other challenge with winter is that with a new dump of snow, it can be too soft. And so, yeah, it could be challenging. You get out there and it gets really soft conditions. And besides not being fun, you don't want to mess up the trails. So sometimes we cancel ride either because of the cold or because the trails are too soft.
And you mentioned the kind of starting in mid-May. When does the mountain biking there's probably not an official start. It's probably snow and weather and spring dependent. But when does it usually start and when do you kind of wind down in the fall?
Yeah, we start our mountain bike rides after May 15th, just to make sure we're not messing up trails. And then, as I said, the first two rides we do are on forestry roads to help guarantee that we're not messing up trails. But generally speaking, sometime in May, the trails are open up and are in good shape to be riding, depending on the winter. And then we ride all the way through. Our official rides end about the second week in September. And then we have unofficial rides after that. And we just keep riding until we start getting a couple of inches of snow on the ground. And then we take a break for 3 or 4 weeks. And then we start our fat bike rides.
That sounds like a great season and just a fun transition. We appreciate you joining us here on Outdoor Explorer. My guest was Eric Troyer, president of the Fairbanks Cycle Club. Thanks again, Eric.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Steve Cleary. For this section of the show on mountain biking, we'll be speaking with Reed Harris, president of the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance. Reed, thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer.
Yeah, hey, Steve, how's it going?
Good, good. Can you tell us a little bit about your history with both Juneau and then the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance? How did that get started?
Yeah, that was by accident. My history with Juneau was not. I was born and raised here and still live here. So 43-year resident of the town at this point. Yeah, the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance started, I think we're in our 11th year at this point. I'm one of the founding members. I'm also the current president of the board alliance. Yeah, we have mountains here and we have biking, and we didn't have a lot of mountain biking or trails in Juneau. And the way a lot of mountain bike clubs get started is people just kind of take it upon themselves to grab some shovels and tools and go into the forest and build some trails, which is exactly what we were doing. You know, we didn't really have permission from the public landowners to do that. And eventually the city and borough of Juneau took notice of that and got in touch with a couple of us. It's like, hey, we really like what you're doing, but could you please stop? And then we could, you know, like get you guys the proper permissions that you need to do this. And also, by the way, you need to form some sort of an organization and have a structure to it. So that's how the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance, or JMBA, got started. I think there were six or seven of us all met in a bar and decided it was a good idea to take the city's advice to organize. So that's how that happened. We now have an MOU in place with the city, so we can propose and develop trails and maintain trails on city lands. We also have a working agreement with the Forest Service, and we have talked to the state DNR before, but a lot of the state land around Juneau is just not really of interest to mountain bikers. So that's in brief our history.
That's great. I'm pleased to hear you have those partnerships set up, and that seems like a great way to go about it rather than the rogue trail building of yesteryear. But I really appreciate your website, and it kind of asks the most glaring question, I guess, which right away, first line, it says mountain biking in a rainforest ? So how does the rain and the wet and all of that affect your trail building down there?
Yeah. My wife and I just got back from British Columbia a few days ago, and down there, I mean, there's dirt on the surface because they don't get the rain that we do. And you could literally walk through the woods with a rake and build a trail. I mean, they literally call it rake and ride. Like, it's very easy there. Here, because most of the land is either slick moss-covered rocks or spruce tree roots and other types of vegetation, it's really hard to build trails here. And with the amount of rain, the hydrology and engineering that goes into a trail, it's absolutely insane. Trails are very slow to be built, especially to the standards that we have developed with the city, and also quite expensive. So trail building is not easy, but they're really unique and they're a lot of fun. We've finally started seeing people coming into Juneau for mountain biking, mostly people from Whitehorse, Carcross, Yukon, that area. It used to be that we would all go up there, but we've built a bike park, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point here, and some other really great trails. And the Trail Mix volunteer trail crew just last year completed the Treadwell Ditch Trail, which is, I think it's 11 or 12 miles end to end at this point. It was just a monumental effort. That was not a mountain bike specific trail, although we did volunteer from time to time. It's a multi-use trail and it's truly fantastic. So yeah, there's trails popping up all over town right now. It's really great to see.
That's awesome. Well, tell us about the bike park. Where's that located? How did it come about? And who's using it?
Sure. I was out there last night riding and working on it. And we were there at 7:30 p.m. And I think I counted 18 people out riding in a very small little park. It's on 50 acres. It's in the Minnehaw Valley behind one of the schools there. And its location there, there's twofold reasons. One is when people start building trails, especially kind of the good old rogue days, we tended to build them around where we lived in our houses. And therefore, a lot of the mountain bike trails sprung up around the downtown corridor or on Douglas Island near Eagle Crest or off of the ditch. The valley didn't really have a lot of opportunities, and the valley's also got 75% of Juneau's population, and a lot of younger kids and families live out in the valley, and there just wasn't a lot of trails out there. So we wanted to start focusing on something like that. And then one of our riders discovered this area tucked up behind Glacier Valley School, which is where the bike park is now. And realized there'd been some sort of massive geological event way back in the day where the mountainside had basically collapsed and ground all this shale into really fine dirt. And so there's dirt right under the surface, and it's really easy to access. And it's almost it's unique in Juneau. There's no other place I know of that has that. And so one or two trails got built by hand by us and volunteers. And then we decided, you know, this place has real potential, so we'd like to start to do something better here. So over the course of 5 years, we raised $320,000 from various community foundations and private donors. I really need to mention the Juneau Community Foundation has been the prime funder that's made this happen, and the Rasmussen Foundation has been generous enough to gift us with two grants. We've received other grants from other entities as well as private individuals, and with that fundraising ability that we've developed, we were able to hire a professional trail builder, a guy named Gary Pash with Senscapes LLC, who is domiciled in Hood River, Oregon. And we came across him when I was riding down there, and I thought, you know, these are the best trails I've seen outside of Whistler, which is this legendary mountain bike park. And so hopped on the internet, got in touch with the Hood River Mountain Bike Association's club president, and he gave me Gary's number, and I was in SeaTac Airport, and I just called him out of the blue and said, "Hey, I'm from Alaska, and we'd love you to come up here." And I think he thought I was insane, but 2 weeks later, we flew him up to come look at the site, and Gary is eternally optimistic and said, "Yeah, we can do this." And so the following summer, we had him up for the first time. We've had him up here for three summers. He was here from May to June this year building, and now we have three professionally built mountain bike trails in the bike park, and then we have four more volunteer built trails, and the quality of riding there is just fantastic. There's nothing really like it. Definitely not in Juneau, probably not in Southeast. And I hear from other people that come visit, they're like, you know, this is almost unique how great this is right here. So we're pretty proud of it.
As well you should be. Gosh, that's really impressive. I hadn't heard the full story of all that. So that's really heartening to hear, and lucky for Juneau residents. You got some really cool videos on your website, which we will of course link to in the show notes here. But tell us a little bit more about trails. If somebody's just coming in to, you know, maybe they got a long weekend in Juneau and they're going to rent a bike, or maybe they'll bring a bike. Where would you send them out to that bike park first? Where's your kind of top three destinations for mountain biking in Juneau?
Sure. The bike park, since it's been completed, or it's almost complete, we're having our grand opening the last Saturday in August this year, which, excuse me, I'll have to check my calendar, is Saturday, August 29th at 11 a.m. if anyone in Juneau's listening or anyone up north wants to come down for it. We'll be having our grand opening for the bike park. As mentioned, when that was completed, a lot of the other trails emptied out. The bike park is so popular. That said, it depends on what you're looking for. Some people like longer cross-country style rides. If that's the case, I really recommend the Treadwell Ditch. You can go from Eagle Crest to Louis Bar downtown Douglas is kind of the typical route for that one. Very flat, very smooth, doesn't have technical features or things like that, but really great scenery. It's a fun grind to hit that trail. Perseverance Trail is a multi-use trail, so we always caution riders to be careful on the downhill because it's a popular trail. There's lots of hikers, but since we've started to kind of work with our ridership on being good stewards of the trail and other users, I haven't heard of a lot of conflicts. I used to get a lot of calls from the city back when mountain biking was in its earlier stages in Juneau, but Perseverance is very popular. There's a bunch of trails that spur off of that, but if you're a newer biker and you're looking to progress, the bike park is where it's at. I mean, it's built as a progression. Bike trails are rated like ski trails are, so Green Circle, Blue Square, Black Diamond, Double Black Diamond. And the park has all of that, and it's really designed to help riders find a level that they're comfortable, keep riding that, and then you can kind of like ratchet up to the next level. And I mean, it's been pretty incredible. A lot of the other trails in Juneau, they're hand cut. They're a lot rougher. There's lots of roots, lots of rocks. They're wet, so they're slick, so they can be pretty challenging. I would just ask the rider what experience they're looking for before sending them somewhere.
Yeah, well, and in talking with folks up in Fairbanks and even us here in Anchorage. We're waiting till off in the end of May before our trails dry out. What's the season run down there? I know it's often nice in the spring. Can you get out fairly early on the trails and start pedaling?
No. I mean, one thing is a lot of mountain bikers are also pretty serious skiers or snowboarders. And when we still have snow in the mountains, that seems to take priority. And also we had a record snowfall year this last winter. And as mentioned, our builder, Gary Pash, came up on May 1st and started digging. And he had to scrape snow off the forest floor in order to get down to build the trail. So our riding season, I mean, it's not so much on months, Steve. It's very variable for when the weather's good. I mean, as I'm sitting here in my office right now, I'm looking out and it's a rainy day and I will not ride today. But yesterday was beautiful, so I was out at the bike park for about 4 hours getting laps in. But any day where the weather's decent, you'll see people on bikes out on trails, and that's really great. And you know, the other neat thing is when I started mountain biking, I was not the first person to be mountain biking, you know, obviously, but there was a small contingent of people. I pretty much knew everyone. And these days I mean, bikes on cars and trucks, people on bikes on trails, I have no idea who they are. And I really like that because it means that it's proliferating throughout our community and spreading. And JMBA's public Facebook page, I think we have over like 1,200 members right now or something like that. So there's a lot of people that are paying attention to mountain biking and Juneau and see it as a viable form of outdoor recreation, which is great.
Well, that's great. And we're going to link to both the Facebook page and your JMBA website in our show notes. I've been speaking to Reed Harris, president of the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance. Reed, thanks so much for taking the time to interview today.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. My pleasure.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.